Hey, this is Ben Flanagan with AL.com and Aspect Radio. I've got a very special interview today with the 21st Annual Sidewalk Film Festival underway in Birmingham. I talked to Mark Maron and director Lynn Shelton about their new movie, Sword of Trust, which is playing during the Sidewalk Film Festival Sunday, August 25th at 2:40 p.m. Central Time at the Alabama School of Fine Arts Dorothy Jemison Day Theater, located in downtown Birmingham. Head to sidewalkfest.com to learn more about this year's festival and check out AL.com for our coverage of the 21st Annual Sidewalk Film Festival. This is a really fun couple of interviews. I actually talked to Mark Maron and Lynn Shelton separately via telephone. We talked about the South. We talked about Alabama, their experience down here filming the movie, their experiences in this state and other southern states in their lifetime before they worked on Sword of Trust and sort of their perceptions of the area. They're really fun conversations, and this movie looks like a great time. I think people in the South will really appreciate it. They made the movie in and around the Birmingham area in Argo, Alabama, and other parts, and it just looks like a ton of fun. The movie is about a couple of sisters who show up to collect an inheritance from their deceased grandfather, but the only item that they receive is an antique sword that was believed by their grandfather to be proof that the South won the Civil War. Mark Maron plays a transplant owner of a pawn shop who runs into these sisters and gets tangled up in this sword story. It looks like a ton of fun. It's co-written by Michael Patrick O'Brien, who you might remember from Saturday Night Live. So check it out, Sword of Trust. It will be playing at Sidewalk Film Festival this Sunday. Here's my conversation with Mark Maron and Lynn Shelton.
Hey, Mark, thanks so much for taking the time. Huge fan of yours.
Oh, thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Sure. Well, excited about Sword of Trust, big time. I want to ask you first about your time in Alabama during production. I know that you took a trip to Montgomery to visit the National Memorial for Peace and Justice, and on your show, you said you were impacted by it. You said it blew your mind, crushed your heart, elevated your soul. And I'm just wondering, how has that stuck with you ever since the visit last year? How did you feel like your expectations about the place were subverted?
There is a cultural sort of re-education going on for me, in terms of really assessing, these paradigms that we've all grown comfortable with. And I don't know that, because, comfortable is not a good thing, but I don't know that I really had a context for the history or the scope of the African American experience, in that region. Obviously I knew what happened historically, but I was never a great student. So to really see it, presented, in such a kind of powerfully poetic and artistic way, just the amount of horror and lynchings and the sort of the kind of implications of all that to where we are currently, was really kind of, eye-opening and mind-blowing and devastating. And the fact that it is done in such a kind of stunning sculptural monument, it's the mixture of art and that to represent as a memorial that type of tragedy and historical transgression. I don't know if I ever would have felt it in the way that I felt it, standing before that thing.
Sure, for sure. And as a longtime listener of the podcast, you've occasionally talked about the South and how your sense or judgment of it has changed, specifically in regards to stereotypes and how those aren't obviously all true. But what is your take on the region now? I know that it's still limited, but you've spent more time down here. You've gotten to know people a little better. What feel do you have for it now?
Look, I always loved going down there, and I think not unlike many people who don't live there, this sort of condescension just kind of happened by habit. It was just something that, the Southern Rube was always sort of a point of humorous stereotype, and I think it just kind of persisted. But my experience down there has always been, there is a politeness down there that I think is a little deceiving sometimes. I think people are generally very polite, but that you know, that doesn't mean they don't want you to leave. But there is a true sort of like, there are people that, you know, are progressive and you know, creative and interesting and diverse. So like, you know, as I started to perform comedy down there more and more, you know, especially in the climate we're living in now politically, there is sort of a relief to have somebody like me come in. You know, there was a period right after the election where, you know, I performed in Nashville and in Atlanta and stuff where, you know, we live in a time where progressive people are afraid to talk to people at work, or they can't talk to their family members anymore. So if they have somewhat of their point of view represented in someone, you know, coming in to get some laughs, I think it's a great relief for them, you know. And so that sort of changed. But the thing that's really changed is there's no way to really, you know, pigeonhole the region, because there's a lot of, you know, great people and good people, you know, all over. You know, they just, you know, they're a little bit surrounded sometimes or outnumbered, but they're there.
Definitely. And I wonder, what was your experience with Alabama prior to Sort of Trust? Have you performed stand-up down here? Anything memorable spring to mind about the state for you?
Well, I've been there. I've been to Montgomery, you know, years ago before, because I had a buddy of mine whose family was from there. It was from Alabama. Yeah, and Montgomery's where the Dexter Baptist Church is, correct?
I believe so.
Yeah, you know, so when we drove cross country once, me and Devin, we stopped at his grandparents' house. His grandfather was a doctor. I think there's a hospital named after him there. You know, I went to the Martin Luther King Memorial, went to the Dexter Avenue, church and stuff. And, you know, and even then, we went out and shot shotguns. So, like, you know, I've always really liked going down there. But I think that, you know, my assumptions and my sort of fear has been replaced with a sort of acceptance and I try to find balance. I mean, I, granted, there are plenty of scary people down there, but they're everywhere.
Definitely. And history is a big part of Sort of Trust. And I don't know how you feel about this idea or label, but just considering your own path and what all you've done to share and uncover history of stand-up and so many other facets of entertainment, I certainly consider you a bit of a historian in your own right. Did your own experience and interest in history inform your choice to play and connect with this character and story?
Well, it was more about, you know, the director, Lynn Shelton, really wanted to work with me. We've worked together on many other projects. She directed me in my show and in Glow, and she directed my last stand-up special. And we've been working on a script for a few years that we hadn't finished yet. And she really wanted to shoot a movie, and I said, well, come up with something. And she came up with this. And I think, you know, more of my interest in and my one-time sort of, you know, compulsive kind of, you know, falling down a rabbit hole of conspiracy thinking, and this was previous to, you know, an administration that seems to support and distribute conspiracies, you know, was sort of on my mind, you know, and having moved through that and learning that, you know, conspiracy theories make things pretty simple for people that don't want to do their homework, that don't want to really, you know, have a real sense of history or facts, and they package it in somewhat fantastical and sometimes absurd ways into a kind of a mythology that they can believe in, you know, whether it's true or not. That part of the human brain and that part of our culture, you know, having, you know, had to wrestle with it myself, you know, back in the 80s, you know, that was more what, you know, kind of like, you know, got me interested. But I was going to do it either way because Lynn wanted me to do it.
Sure, and the film has an amazing cast, largely made up of people from outside the South, including Lynn Shelton. I know John Bass is from Texas, but I wonder, was that something that you felt everybody had in common? Like there was this sort of close group of transplants experiencing something together in this very specific part of the country. What was sort of the collective mood or impression about the filming environment?
I think that, you know, when there was a lot of locals on the crew, and, you know, Whitmer, who plays one of the guys that kind of tries to stick me up in the store, he's from down there. And, you know, Toby, I think, is from Iowa. But, I mean, we did feel like transplants to a degree. But, you know, we were surrounded by people from the area, and everybody was, you know, working together. And I think Lynn really went out of her way and was excited to shoot in an environment that was new to her, you know, having shot most of her movies up where she comes from in the Pacific Northwest. And I think she really went out of her way to kind of, like, spend time down there before and kind of, and I think she depicted it pretty well, the sort of pace of the South and the feel of the South. I mean, the movie, it feels a little balmy. You can feel the heat, and there is sort of a slowness to it that's kind of poetic and beautiful. And I think she went out of her way to find the humanity of some of the more extreme characters in the film. And it's weird, even Toby Huss, you know, who you would think, you know, when we were shooting that, we thought that character was over the top, but there were people from the area that were like, nope, we know that guy. That guy is not unusual.
Oh, yeah, I haven't seen the movie yet, but just from the trailer and his performance, I thought, yeah, he got it. So with this, Joker, another season of GLOW, and what I think is one of the best shows in recent memory, Easy, you're having an amazing year on screen, and that doesn't account for your podcast, stand-up, and other work. And as more opportunities come, you're making really interesting choices, working with filmmakers like Lynn Shelton, Todd Phillips, Joe Swanberg. It seems important to you to stay busy, but to do it with really talented people. And I just wonder, what's your process like when it comes to making that choice to commit to a new show or a role like yours in Sword of Trust?
Well, you know, a lot of it has to do with, you know, is it something I can do? You know, can I relate to what they want me to do? You know, I like to take some more risks as an actor as I get better at it. But, you know, I tend to work within my wheelhouse. You know, I don't think I'm playing me and everything, but, you know, I'd like to be able to know that I can find some emotional depth to what I'm doing, even if it's in a short little piece like in The Joker. But also, you kind of like time, too. You know, I auditioned for those Avatar movies, you know. I went and auditioned for, what's his name, John Cameron? Is that him?
You know? James Cameron.
James Cameron, yes. And, you know, if I would have got that part, I would have basically, you know, been stuck in New Zealand for God knows how long. And, I had to go experience the audition process, but I was really hoping I didn't get it. So time has something to do with it, and also just the nature of the project and who's involved. All those things sort of add up. And I'm not, you know, I don't have to rely on acting for my livelihood. It's something that I've always wanted to do, and I'm grateful that I'm getting an opportunity to do it. But, you know, I am in a position where I can easily say no to most things because, you know, most of my livelihood is, you know, generated by the podcast and by stand-up and by GLOW. So it's really about things that will, you know, that seem interesting and working with interesting people and things that challenge me or might be fun, though I'm not always clear what fun is.
And my last question for you, Mark, what was the best thing that you ate that you felt was specifically Southern while you were down here?
Oh, man, I went to, like, what was that place in Birmingham? Like, they had greens and gravy, and, like, I can't remember. Like, I go out of my way. You know, I eat pretty healthy generally, but this was like, I can't remember the name of the restaurant, but man, it was so good. There might have been a biscuit involved. You know, I don't remember. We went to that place that won all the awards. That was amazing. The something Bar and Grill, he won the James Beard Award.
Highlands.
Yeah, man, we went there. That was astounding. That was awesome. Definitely lived up to whatever, you know, whatever work that guy put into it, it showed in the food. It was great.
Awesome. Oh, that's great. Well, Mark, thank you so much for the time. Best of luck with the movie and everything else moving forward, and keep up the great work.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
All right, take care.
What you are looking at?
Yes.
Is a genuine relic, mm-hmm. A very valuable piece of evidence,
mm-hmm.
that supports the actual truth, which is the South won the war.
Okay. The South won the war?
That's right.
Show them the documentation.
Here.
Have you told anybody else this?
Just to get started, I want to ask you a few questions about Sword of Trust in the South and Alabama. I know that the movie was originally going to be set in Kentucky after you spent a writing retreat there. how did it shift to Alabama?
It shifted because my dear old friend, he's not old. We've known each other a long time, just to be clear. Ted Speaker is based in Alabama, and I called him and begged him to produce my film. And he said, well, I have another job right now, but if you move the film to Alabama, I will step out of that other job and come over and produce your film. And I said, great, no problem. It just has to be in the South somewhere, because I had now written myself a very Southern-based narrative, and it was kind of serendipity, perfect.
I see. And so what was your experience with Alabama prior to Sword of Trust? I mean, had you been there before? Anything memorable spring to mind?
Only once. I had been with my very first feature film, We Go Way Back. I had been to Alabama because I brought We Go Way Back to the Sidewalk Film Festival in 2006. And that, in fact, is where I met Ted Speaker, who ended up producing my film Sword of Trust. So it was sort of a full circle situation. He was a programmer, and he really, really liked my first feature. In fact, he even wore a potato around his neck for a day to have people ask him what the heck he was wearing a potato necklace for, so that he could tell them it was so that they could, you know, he was promoting my film because there's a potato theme in it. Anyway, he's a big fan, and he took me out to lunch and told me that he'd love to support me in any way that he could, and it sparked a friendship, and he created music for my second feature film and made a little behind-the-scenes video for my third feature film, and he designed a bunch of, like, you know, posters and business cards and my website and stuff. And he really helped me out early on in my career. And then he went off and became a producer, you know, started getting producing chops to set himself over the years. And then we were able to really, you know, come back together and reconnect and work together very closely on this movie. And it was just extremely satisfying because the guy is incredibly talented and real easy to work with. So that was my connection to very personal connection to Alabama. But I had not been to Birmingham since 2006. So it had been quite a gap.
You've said that the initial inspiration for the project, it came from your wanting to work with Marc Maron again, and starting with this idea of him as a pawn shop owner. I'm immediately sold on Marc Maron as a transplant in the South, and I just wonder, why do you think the setting suited his instincts as an actor in your collaboration with him?
Well, it was interesting because, you know, Marc is a huge fan of the blues, and pretty knowledgeable about the blues as well, and so it was very fitting that the name of the pawn shop that we ended up taking over a third of, a quarter of maybe, it's a vast pawn shop, the Delta Pawn. That's the real name. We really use it in the actual movie. And Jean Paul, the owner, let us build a false wall and take over one of his entrances. And we just created a little kind of corridor so that people could still get customers of his could still get into the store, and he could still run his business for the 5 days that we were shooting in a big portion of it. And he was incredibly generous. But the fact that it was called Delta Pawn, and that Marc is a big fan of the Delta Blues. And in fact, as I was editing the movie, I started to hear his music because he's a guitar player, a very bluesy guitar player himself. And it just was, it all sort of matched up. And I realized, oh, wow, like the character that he's created and the music that he already makes, you know, as a guitar player and his love of the blues, it really was an interesting fit. Like it all just kind of organically matched. I wasn't really even aware of it until it was actually all coming together. It was kind of remarkable.
Well, I actually talked to Marc earlier this week about the South and how his sense or judgment of it has changed throughout the years, specifically in regards to like stereotypes and how those obviously aren't all true. I'm curious about your own sense of the region before and after production. You've said that it was important that this took place in the South. This story specifically takes place there. So what feel do you have for the place now?
Oh, I mean, I'm really in love with the South. As a Northerner who's spent very little time there, I felt mostly like I just didn't know a ton about it. But my experiences prior to this movie making experience were really positive. I mean, I had a great time at Sidewalk when I was there. And then I also went to Indie Memphis and had a really spectacular time at Indie Memphis, spent some time there. And did when I was years ago, I had driven through the South on my way to Florida from, we took a road trip, my husband at the time and I, from New York to Florida, and stopped along the way in a lot of southern spots. And I always had a real fascination with the South because culturally it really does feel to me like a different country almost, or a different planet. You know, the main way, honestly, is the way that people interact with each other is kind of remarkable to me. My first night in Birmingham, when I landed to do, you know, start my prep process for a few weeks, I remember going to a Whole Foods and I was trying to reach past somebody was working there who was trying to stock the cooler. I was reaching across and I was sort of, I'm sorry, excuse me, you know, and I was just reaching over and not making eye contact. And as soon as he registered my presence, he just full on turned to me and said, "Well, hi, how you doing? What, you know?" And he just started engaging with me. That was in a way that was completely alarming to me. It was so out of my, my kin. It was so out of my sort of experience with strangers in the world, you know, and how I interact with them. And I thought it was just him. I thought, oh, here's this extremely gregarious person. Like, he's just so warm and I don't, you know, that's very unusual. And then it just started happening again and again and again and again. And I had so many long, really involved, wonderful interactions with complete strangers. And it was, I loved that. I loved it so much. And it seems very genuine. It seems very warm. And it seems so human. Like, why aren't people like that all over the place? You know, I got so used to it that when I came back to Los Angeles, I would do it to people. And they just looked at me like I was out of my mind, you know. That's my absolute favorite thing about the South, is the way that people interact with other people. And there's this sort of genuine sort of, not just politeness, but a real genuine sense of warmth that I really encountered again and again every day.
As somebody who's so experienced in directing improvisation, I just wonder how you think the area influences that freedom and the choices that the actors make. The accents and the general nature of the place they're pretty infectious in ways I'm sure that performers might inform their characters and how they might react to it all. Was that something that you experienced on set during the production?
Yeah, definitely. Jillian Bell adopts an accent that isn't her own. It's Southern. And Tim Paul as well is another actor who came from LA who adopted an accent. And I think it definitely, and I found I do it. I've done it. I did it when I was in Ireland, I remember. And I tried not to, you know, I sort of do it naturally. So I was like, okay, well, don't do that. That's annoying. But and probably insulting, but I did find that the cadence, you know, and little idioms and the way that you're, you know, I don't know, the tone of how I spoke definitely shifted. You just, it's like when in Rome, you can't help it, you know. But it definitely helped our actors who did not have those accents to achieve them. And then I did also hire folks who were either expats of the South. Elise Mayfield, I think it just moved back, actually. She plays a part. Al Elliott is a local institution there in Birmingham, and as well as Whitmer Thomas, who grew up in Gulf Shores, and he came back from LA to do it for me, to be in the movie. So I tried to hire as many of those folks as I could, but the whole crew was basically local, and yeah, it was really helpful, you know, to really just be surrounded by folks, and of course you're just embedded in the culture, and it definitely helped, I think, keep people loose and give the whole movie a real sense of place, because we all sort of just sunk into the heat and humidity and the culture of Birmingham, which, you know, I love very much.
Gotcha. Well, Lynn, thank you so much for the time. Thank you for making the movie in Alabama, and best of luck moving forward.
Thanks. I hope you enjoy it when you see it. Thanks, Ben.
For sure. Thank you.
Came here looking for something.
Uh-huh.
Heard you have it.
Can we narrow it down a little?
We're looking for a sword.
All right.
A sword.
Why was that so hard?
It wasn't hard.
Why did we have to take that route to get there?
30 seconds to get there. It wasn't that long.
Let's just be on the same page. We're just trying to sell this thing for a lot of money, and that's that.
Bam.
This is definitely how people die. I don't know who these people are. I don't know what they're capable of.
We're in this together.
me, you, the two ladies. We just got to get that $40,000. I'm so hard right now, I can barely keep my mind straight.
Wait a minute, are you using that word right?
Down in a country like this, wind up in a ditch dead, and nobody'd ever find you.